go to Genesis. Barashith. Barashith. Brother Roger, what does Barashith mean? In beginnings. And the book of Genesis is a book of beginnings, isn't it? Now, we know about the providence and foreknowledge and predestination, don't we? Do we? Brother Ray? According to Calvinism, you're a Calvinist, are you not?
Yes.
By standards of the world. Mm-hmm. Okay. What grouping of Calvinists are you in?
It'd be more like a sublapsarian, modified sublapsarian.
Okay. Now, we know, and we see the providence of God, we see the foreknowledge of God. I'm also teaching systematic theology. Have you gotten any of those in there?
I did, yes.
Okay.
I don't know which number it was. I tried to put in number one of it.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get it on my phone. I couldn't figure out
how to get to number one.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, as we study systematic theology, we will see how God's providence and foreknowledge does not in any means come over and make precedence over our volition. The providence and foreknowledge of God does not leave out our volition, our freedom of choice. Now, God here is talking to Abraham, and God tells Abraham to do something. We're studying, and we've gone from eternity past into space and time. We're going to go through this chart briefly. We're going to see how God has worked, but there's always, Satan always has his helpers, doesn't he? He is never still. He's on the job 24 hours a day trying to thwart God's eternal purpose and his unpermittable progress. We see it. And God works through very, very imperfect individuals. I'm about as imperfect as they come. And I don't care how much you think that you're perfect and a Christian, you're imperfect. Not one of us, no human being in the history of the world has ever gone into the glory of God on their own merits. It has taken the blood of Jesus Christ to get anybody into heaven. There is no other ticket. There is no other key to the door. But God knows things are what are going to happen before they ever happen. But he doesn't cause them to happen. Do you understand that? He allows mankind and angels and spirits volition. We see these things take place, and part of it is what we're going to see today. And the 12th chapter of Genesis. Now, I want you to go back to the 9th chapter of Genesis. I keep repeating this because this is absolutely one of the most important scriptures in the Bible when it comes to foreknowledge and the providence of God. In verse number 24 in the 9th chapter of Genesis, it says that when Noah woke from his wine, he knew what his youngest son had done to him. And he said, "Cursed be Canaan." Now, he didn't curse Ham. If he'd have cursed Cain, he would have cursed himself. But in cursing Canaan, which was probably the product of the sin, the Mishnah and the Talmud and the ancient writings of the rabbis say that Ham actually violated his own mother, and Canaan was the product of that incestuous relationship. And I could go into this very deeply, but we won't. When he touched his wife, he touched him. When you molest or commit adultery with somebody's wife, you have actually molested the man.
Amen.
Because that is his property. You've touched his property. And that's what it is. So what he's talking about, he knew what he had done to him. He said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants, and he shall be to his brothers." And he also said, "Blessed be the Lord God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant, and may God enlarge Japheth, and let him dwell in tents of Shem." We know that Japheth, the Gentile church, will take over the reins of the administration of God's kingdom in the age that we're in today. But we're going way beyond. In eternity past, God said this was going to happen. Not eternity past, but in thousands of years ago, he said this would happen. Let Canaan be his servants. Then it says Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he, Wayamoth, is what it says in Hebrew, Wayamoth, and he died after 950 years. Now let's go to the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis. And look over here. As we look at that, I want you to see we have the flood, and they were supposed to scatter and multiply, and we talked about Nimrod and his kingdom, how that he tried to overcome God and establish false religion, and he built this great tower to false religion. And here we have this. They did not scatter, and then God divided the earth and confused the languages. Actually, to confuse the languages first and then divided the earth. Now we have a new heaven up there, because the heaven is not the same either, is it? Because now we have rain. Before, the earth, I mean, the first Hashemayim, the atmosphere has changed. There was an ocean in the sky. And the whole earth was like a greenhouse. And it protected from the UV rays. This ocean in the sky protected. And people lived on this side of the flood for hundreds of years. But after that, no, they don't. They're 150, 200 years. That's all. Mankind's lifespan has come down because of his environment has changed. The earth has changed. And now he calls out Abraham. His name was Abram. Say Abram.
Abram.
Abram. Abram. You can say that real good, Brother Ray. Abram.
Abram.
Yeah. His name meant exalted father. But he changed his name to Abraham. Abraham did not get to heaven because of his own righteous works, because we know that the guy was kind of ungodly, wasn't he? He was a shyster. He was a used car salesman in the worst degree. God called Abraham out, Genesis 12, 1 through 7, which we're going to look. In Genesis 12 and verse 10 and 46 and 6, we find that he didn't stay in Canaan, did he? He said, go to Canaan. Now, he told his grandfather, Noah, that Canaan would be a servant to Shem, did he not? So they would go into the land of Canaan, Palestine, if you want to call it that, or the Middle East there, and they're going to go in there, and they're going to build farms, they're going to build houses, they're going to go in there and what we call civilize or cultivate the land. But God knew that these are going to be bad guys. They're going to be bad people. So God is going to allow them to go in there. He allows them to live for hundreds of years in there. But then there's a time when they get really, really bad. They're going to get worse and worse and worse in paganism. Now, not all of those people die and go to hell, because there's individuals in the land of Canaan that are believers. And we'll see them all the way through the Old Testament if you look at that. We see them. So each one of them, even though as a national group they are terrible, there are individuals that can be saved in that national group. We see that. We had Rahab the harlot, Ruth the Moabitess, and others down through there. Others. The individual's rights are never overlooked. As a whole, these people would be bad. Well, let's look and see what God says to Abram. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives. Why, Brother Ray? Where did he live?
Ear of the Chaldees.
Yeah, and the pagans down here. A very civilized society as far as they had a tremendous libraries. And many people, if you look at the higher school of criticism, about the Bible, they'll say, Abraham, they didn't know how to read and write in his time, but they did. We have the law of Hammurabi.
Right.
The greatest libraries now that they know in the Ur of the Chaldees was there at that time. Yeah, they were the Sanskrit, Chaldee, all of these languages were there. Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house. Get out among those pagans And I'm going to give you the land that I promised Noah that I'd give to you. Okay? That's the whole story here. And to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will make you a great nation. Now, God knew this. But God absolutely tests us sometimes and tests our faithfulness, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. I've heard this said many times, God won't put on you more than you can handle. You ever heard that, Brother Ray?
Many times.
That's a lie. The only time he can get our attention when we got more upon us than we can handle. And that's when we're crying out for help. And that's when we get closer and closer and closer to God. What are some of these temptations that we have in the world, in our own lives? Many people money, many people promiscuity, whatever it may be. That these are temptations in the world. Money is one of the greatest hindrances to serving God there is, isn't it? Well, isn't it? Yet it can be the great asset of serving God if you lend it to him because you got it by him. We work really hard. My family worked hard for hundreds of years. I'm Indian. My family had plantations in the South, great plantations with homes in the South. They were Indian culture. The American Indian was the inventor and originator of corn and tomatoes and potatoes and beans. And they had great horticulture. They were botanists from coast to coast. When you took off from New Mexico on backward there, you saw the Great Plains. The Great Plains didn't happen. The Great Plains were created. The buffalo were spread. Indians were smarter than white people. They had beef, so to speak, buffalo on the hoof. And they didn't have to calve them. They didn't have to take care of them. They didn't have to feed them. They didn't have to inoculate them. When you buy buffalo in the store today, it will not have hormones put in it. If it says buffalo, that animal has not been given hormones. He has not been given growth deal, no antibiotics or anything else. Because God made them to take care of themselves. That's God's animal. The Indians created the Great Plains. They burned off all that brush and everything. When people first came to this country, Europeans, they said, those Indians set that country on fire every springtime. Or every fall, that is. Every fall, the place is burning from coast to coast. The Indians burned so much grass and timber off over here, it caused a mini ice age in Europe during that period of time when the Great Plains were being created. They'd go set the forest on fire and kill all the bugs and the fleas and the ticks and everything off, burn them. We used pesticide, the Indians used fire. They said that every place an Indian, he had a sticks or flints to cause fire. He was setting everything on fire wherever he went, burning off the undergrowth. Now they figure out in forestry now that the reason why we have these great, terrible forest fires is they don't burn the hills every fall. Mm-hmm. Preventative maintenance. That's what the Indians were doing. We see all of this. We see the corn and the cultures. The five civilized tribes, have you heard of those? You know why they call them the five civilized tribes? Because they lived on farms and plantations. When the white man came to this country, they would have starved to death if they didn't have adapt Indian culture. They couldn't hunt. They couldn't fish. They had weapons that were very, very primitive compared to the Indians' weapons. They had blunderbusses that they couldn't shoot straight. And Indians were sailing one arrow on top of another. They could shoot 20, 30 arrows by the time a white man could shoot one gun. And they used to say, the gunpowder won the West. Mm-hmm. When gunpowder, it was Anopheles quadrimaculatus and all of the diseases the white man brought into this country because there weren't any. Remember, when this is going on over here, that America is over here. They used to, the Mormons, Joseph Smith and Solomon Spaulding wrote that Paradise Lost. How that the Jews floated over there in a boat over to America and established this country over here. By DNA, we know that's not. We are Indians. We are Oriental. We're Asians. We are not Jews. But they were here all the time when God divided the earth. We see all of that. A lot of stuff is going on over here in America, in the Americas, when this is happening over in Europe. I'm giving you a little bit of Western civilization as we go on, and what we call anthropology, too. In Europe, they were living in Bedouin tents, weren't they? But there were people over there living in palaces and building pyramids, weren't there? And we see that in Mesoamerica and South America. We see the same type cultures as going on in the Egyptian cultures. The oldest mummies in the world are not in Egypt. They're in South America. Great palaces. And you know what those palaces were built upon? Slave culture. And what did Cain do? He invented slavery. Now, Cain's descendants didn't come this side of the flood. But we have Nimrods, don't we? Mm-hmm. And Nimrods, a society thrived on what? Slavery and great buildings. And we see that in South and at Meso and South America. In North America, we had great cultures. The builders, the mound builders. Now, the Smithsonian Institute, because the white man and even the United States of America had to have a reason to take over this land and steal it from the original inhabitants. We had to be less than human. See, we had to be savages for that to happen. Look what happened in California. When America came into California and stole California and Texas from Mexico. They absolutely, I don't know whether you're a descendant of some of those Spanish people that were here in California. Joaquin Marietta, the real Zorro, lived right on this place part of the time, right here where I am. After they killed his wife and raped her and his mother and hung his brother, he said that I will kill you people. If you don't kill me right now, they horsewhipped him and tied him to a tree. And he hunted those people down and roped them and hung them by dragging. And drug them to death. Every one of them. The only ones that didn't get killed took off and left and went someplace else. Then he began to go through the San Joaquin Valley all the way from San Jose and San Francisco and come down here and gather up at least 300 horses at a time. And he would rest those horses right where you're sitting, right here. This was great pasture lands here. And he would, right here, was a lean-to where he lived for about 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time until he rested the horses and they got rehydrated, and then they would drive them from here over the mountains up here or over Tehachapi and drive them all down to Cucamonga. And he let them rest there for another 2 or 3 weeks and then drove them to Sonora, Mexico and sold them down there. That's the real Zorro story. That's Joaquin Marietta. Joaquin Marietta. Part of right up here someplace in a little jar. Right there it is. Let me show this to you. This is a square nail from his shelter right here. From Joaquin Marietta, 1850 times. Okay? That's from right here. There's more of them in there. That's where his shelter was, right where you're sitting right now. Now, all of this is going on over here, and we have people going over there, and we have the Bedouin culture, which is like the Great Plains Indian. And we have that in the Europe, and then we have these, and the Canaanites are settled farmers, like the North American Indian was and the Mesoamerican Indian. They were growing great plantations, big buildings. My family in Mississippi, the Chickasaws, you can trace them down to 1539 and 40, my very family, Moshokchu, among the Chickasaw Indians. When Cortez came in here and went back there and stopped in 1539, the Chickasaws gave him a place to stay and fed the rat. And then, in the springtime, he decided to make slaves out of those Indian boys. That didn't fly. They whooped him and ran him off and chased him across the Great Plains. And his hogs got scattered, and that's how the wild hogs got into the South. It was from his hogs that got loose. Because the Spanish drove hogs wherever they went. That was portable food. And they were tough animals, and they take care of themselves. But they tore up those Indian villages, and the Indians scattered them off and scattered Cortez and whatever. Anyway, the five civilized tribes, my family, the Chickasaws, lived in great plantations there. And then Andrew Jackson said he's going to get the Indians and put them out there in Indian territory, and no way will they ever take Indian territory from them forevermore. It's going to be their land, but he's going to steal all of their plantations, all their farms. These were great plantations. You know where the people in the South with these big pillars and all that? Those are Indian buildings. The Indians built those things. I can show you pictures of that. I can show you a picture of my family's home in Pauls Valley, Oklahoma, the Pauls. A plantation in 1872 when it was built. It's still there today, just like in the South. Great plantations. All this is going on here while this is going over in Europe and Middle East. The cultures, the Indians just didn't come over here and migrate here. They were here when the earth was divided. That's one thing I want you to understand. Mm-hmm. They said, now, go far from your country and your pagan relatives and from your father's pagan house. Just put that in, because that's exactly the reason why. And to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. And you know what this word is? It's a P.L. stem in it, Brother Roger. We've looked at this in Hebrew. I will intensely bless you. That word is the barak. Barak. I will bless you. I will intensely bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And how is that, Brother Ray? In his seed, which is Christ. If you're ever going to get to heaven, anybody in the whole world, in any culture, in any nation, anywhere, if they go to heaven, it's going to be because of what Jesus did, not what they did. So Abraham went forth, and the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Lot was a problem, wasn't he? This is how you say Lot in Hebrew. Remember that, Brother Ray? How do you say Lot in Hebrew? Brother Roger? Lot in Hebrew. Lot. Lot. Like louse. Lot. Lot. Lot is Lot, which means dark and hidden. This is a bad boy. Now, he's a saved man, but he's a scoundrel. We wouldn't even know that he's saved if the New Testament didn't tell us that he vexed his righteous soul. Can a person in this age that we live in here, the church age, can they vex their righteous soul by living like the world? You vex your righteous soul. Now, Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abraham took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons, now this is slavery, the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Now, let's go on down a little bit further. In the same place, in verse number 10, now there was famine in the land. So Abram, his name not Abraham yet, is Abram, okay? Went down to Egypt. What does Egypt mean, Brother Roger?
Land of canals and red mud.
A land of red mud and canal banks. That's what we call irrigated lands. In Palestine and Canaan, they just basically, all the farming there was what we call dry land farming. But down in Egypt, they are procuring water from the Nile and cultivating irrigated farms. That's a lot more reliable, isn't it, than waiting for terrain. So they're down there because, and this is something you need to understand too. A lot of people just overlook all of this. In America, they had Indians irrigated things. In South America, there was irrigation. And in Mesoamerica, there were irrigated farms. Irrigated farms. In North America, there were irrigated farms. The white people, when they came to the eastern coast, they looked out there and they saw the lights of thousands of homes. And they came here and they looked at they came into these Indian villages where homes were built, and they couldn't believe the cleanliness of the Indians. Because the Europeans were nasty, dirty, filthy people. And that's one of the reasons why they had so much disease and spread of disease. It's because the streets were sewers in Europe. People went out in the street. They threw their feces and urine out in the street. You'd have never seen that here in this country. That didn't happen here. They did not use the streets for a cesspool. When the white man came here, the English and the Spanish, they looked at the great cities in South America, and they saw no skinny people. They saw healthy people. In Northeast, they came into these great villages where the lights were, and they came in there, and they were starving to death, and these Indians were fat and clean. And the Indians used to say when they saw a white man, you could smell him for a mile before you looked at him. Filthy people never had a bath in their life. The Indians bathed so they wouldn't smell each other. You could smell a white man. When an Indian went hunting, he bathed. He bathed before he went hunting so the animal couldn't smell him. And he rubbed himself down with sage or whatever the a very aromatic plant would be in that area. So when a deer or a buffalo smelled him, that they thought they just smelled in the countryside. You see all of this. This is important now. When we see the European, why did they have a great magnitude of disease in Europe? Why did God give the law of Moses to the Jews? Because the law of Moses, basically, is what the Indians were practicing over here for 1,000 years. In cleanliness and hygiene.
Right.
Europeans had no hygiene. They were filthy people. Filthy people. And here we go over in the Middle East. What were the cleanest people in the Middle East? What were the cleanest people in the Middle East? The greatest culture. What were the cleanest people? Brother Ray, you remember who the cleanest people in the Middle East were?
Huh?
The Essenes, right? Oh, no. Well, the Essenes, so that's later on. At this period of time, what's the cleanest people in the Middle East, brother? In the Mediterranean. The Egyptians. Abraham, kind of a stinky old boy, is going to go down there and see the cleanest culture in that country was like American Indians. Those Egyptians shaved and washed themselves every day. Pharaoh's daughter, when she went out into the Nile, she was taking a bath, her daily bath. I don't know how long. I don't know whether Abraham ever had a bath. I guess he did because they were baptizing people. At least it got wet. And baptism wasn't sprinkling, rontizo, or nepto pouring. It was immersion. Let's go on a little further. It came about that came near Egypt after there was famine in the land. Now there was famine in the land, so Abraham went down to Egypt. Did God tell him to go to Egypt?
Nope.
No. What is Egypt a type of in the Bible?
The world.
The world. And down there are what we call pagan cultures. Again, he left a pagan culture and he goes back to another pagan culture. Probably even bigger pagan culture. Because they got myriads of gods down there. Okay, now, go over there and land in Canaan. These guys are scoundrels and I'm going to give you that their land one of these days. When their sins have filled up. Now, it came about when he came near to Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, and her name wasn't Sarah yet either, it was Sarai. What does Sarai mean, Brother Roger?
Prince, contentious.
Contentious. She's a contentious woman. This woman is contentious. She is a striving, contentious woman. And you're going to see that's exactly, she lives up to her name. Sarah comes from Sarah, which means prince. But a prince gets a land, some land by fighting for it and being contentious. And he has to keep it by being that way. He is a warrior all the time. Now, the American Indian culture in North America, they had chiefs among the Indians. But the people appointed the chiefs, they were all, every tribe in America was a democratic republic. It was a socialist democratic republic. Every society in America was. Every one. And you weren't chief unless you did something outstanding. They appointed you chief because you were outstanding. And if you did something un-outstanding, bad or wrong, you are no longer chief. And when the Europeans came here, have you ever heard of these Indian princesses? Indian princess? Pocahontas, Indian princess, all this stuff. This is baloney. There were no Indian princesses. They wanted to make a point, and they called them, the chiefs, they called them princes. And the chief could sign a document for the whole tribe. That didn't fly with the American Indians. All of the treaties that they made with American Indians at that time were all invalid because they were democracies. Nobody could sign for those people. Now, in Europe, they had princes, and the princes signed the document. King James' Bible was documented under his regulation that they would not translate anything contrary to the belief of the Church of England. And they would always have the Apocrypha in it, or by pain of death. These were the rules, and the king signed it. When they came to America, they wanted to make some people over here kings. And the chiefs, they said, well, that's the king. Every Indian person, and by the way, most of the cultures were traced to the woman, not the man. In Europe, it's to the man. Over here, it's to the matriarch, the woman. The woman had the culture. The woman owned the property. The man provided, the woman owned the property. She owned the teepee. She owned all the furnishings of the teepee. And many of them lived in this semi-nomadic culture. They had houses and places. But the Plains Indians, they would go and they would hunt. The Northeastern Indians drove buffalo all the way back there. So they didn't have to have cattle. They go out there. Well, I'd like to have a buffalo steak today. Well, George, go out there in Hiawatha or whoever. Go out there and kill one of those buffaloes out in that north pasture. Go get one of them. Get us a young, tender one, okay? I don't want to have to chew. My teeth are getting bad, you know. And they were living to be 120 years old here, 130 years old in America. We had warriors among the Chickasaws over 100 years old. Sarah, his wife, and now I know that you are a beautiful woman. And she's a pretty old gal, but she's beautiful. She's pretty. Not only she was pretty, she's an old gal that's still pretty, but she is exotic, something different. Pharaoh liked different women. He wanted a little spice added to his life. Said, look at that woman's different. I want her. She's not like us. She's different. And so, this beautiful woman, look at her for a woman of beauty and appearance. Now, those Egyptians, what did they take from the fallen angels? What did the Egyptians take from the fallen angels, Brother Roger? Do you remember what cultural difference that they took from them?
Makeup.
Mm-hmm. They wore a lot of makeup. They painted their eyes and everything. And this came from the fallen angels in Nephilim. That's where they learned this. And they were made up. And here comes a girl that's not made up. You know, women, if they leave themselves alone, they're really pretty. Either woman is either pretty or she's not pretty. Either her face will stop a clock or it's going to be pretty naturally, and there's nothing you can do about it. I remember a guy one time, I knew him well, and he owned restaurants. And he picked out a pretty homely waitress that he fell in love with. And he sent her for plastic surgery, and she got pretty, and he built her body up and everything, where she was really pretty. And he had a baby by her. And then she turned on him. One time she was ugly as a mud fence, but now she's pretty. Now she can command an audience. That was a mistake. He should have left her ugly. You want to be happy, marry an ugly woman. You know, they said a long time ago. And I will come about when the Egyptians see you that they will say that this is my wife and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say you're my sister so that it may go well with me because of you and that I may live on account of you. Now, she was his half-sister, wasn't she? So he wasn't totally lying, but you know that his son did the same thing later on?
Yep.
Same thing. And it came about when Abraham went into Egypt. Now we see the Egyptians, the land of red mud and canal, makes a very civilized culture, high in medicine. They were practicing medicine. They were practicing all types of embalming there. They were building great buildings. They had great farms, and they had plenty of food. And the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. Now, who are these guys? These are all Pharaoh's servants. What does Pharaoh mean, Brother Roger?
Man in the big house.
Man in the big house. That's what Pharaoh means. Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's officials saw her and praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. The used car salesman is on the prod. Here he goes. Now here's Abraham. He's going to make a lot of money off this beautiful woman. And therefore he treated Abraham well for her sake, and he gave him sheep and oxen and donkeys and male and female servants, and he gave him his daughter, Hagar. He gave him his daughter for a political marriage. Because now if Abraham married his daughter, then the children from that daughter, if they went to war with Pharaoh, they would be killing their own people. This is what we call a political marriage. Mm-hmm. Abraham was not an honest man by any means. You couldn't say, here is Abraham, the honest guy, because Abraham was not honest. The only thing about Abraham is Abraham was saved, and Abraham was a prophet of God. That's all we can say about him, because he was a scoundrel. And here we have one of his first failures as a what we call a prophet. He's a lying prophet. And female servants and female donkeys and camels. He's got all kinds of lying. And he probably even has. And by the way, the school of Hierarchism says that there were no camels in this area. But if you go back in this time and culture, you will see coins printed with camels on them. This is another thing you're going to run into. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his house with great plagues, and because Sarah, Abraham's wife. And Pharaoh called Abraham on the stage here. Get up here, boy. He's going to inspect him now. What have you done to us? And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? How do you think Abraham or Pharaoh knew this? Hypnose. What's hypnose mean? God appeared to him in a dream and told him, you take that woman from that prophet of God, I'm going to kill you. And we find out in another place that when Abraham did this, that God closed up the wombs. The men could not penetrate the women. Their wombs were closed. That's not natural, is it? Their wombs were closed. They cannot have sex with them. And when this happened, they said, ooh, what's going on around here? Something miraculous, something paranormal is going on. Something supernatural is happening here. What's going on? We find out about that later, too. And why did you not tell me that she was your wife? And why did you say that she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now, he didn't actually have sex with this woman yet. And that was the consummation of marriage was sex. The act of sex was a consummation of marriage, and that's what it all was through the Old Testament here. But he had actually made a contract with Abraham to buy her and traded his daughter, gave her his daughter for his sister, plus all kinds of camels and male donkeys, jacks, and female donkeys, and sheep and cattle and everything. He just gave him lavish gifts because this now was going to be a political ally. Because Abraham had a lot of soldiers with him. And his reputation had preceded him. Take her and go. Take her and get out of here. Take your wife and go. And Pharaoh commanded that his men concerning him, and they escorted him out of the land. They made sure that he left. They gave him lots of food and everything else, and he didn't take his daughter back or any of his guests back because he figured, wow, this guy, there's something wrong with this feller. Everything he touches turns to what we call a curse. I don't want anything that's been touched by him to come back to me. Because something going on, there's some weird gods going on with Abraham. He's got some demonic powers or something. And they escorted him away and his wife, and all that belonged to him didn't keep one thing. And Abraham went up into the land of Negev, and he and his wife and all belonged to him and Lot with him. And Abraham was very rich in livestock and silver and gold. Now, because in Egypt there's silver and gold. He didn't have silver. What's that word in Hebrew, brother, for silver? Kaseth? Yeah, Kaseth. That's silver. That's money. Used to, a long time ago, they'd have bars of silver, and they would chop off a bar, part of that bar, and that's, you know, and weigh it. That's how much. And then they started coining it, and every coin, and they started coining gold and silver in what we call Canaan land, and making it of a standard, what we call a standard monetary value. Now, Abraham's got plenty of money. He's got a lot of money. And Lot with him, and Abraham was very rich in livestock, and he went on his journeys into the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place, the altar which he had made there formerly. And Abraham called on the name of the Lord in that place. Now we find out Lot. Now God has got to separate. God calls a separation, doesn't he? God calls a separation when we're trying to serve him. Now he's got to separate this dross, because Abraham was a scoundrel, all right, but Lot was worse. And Lot would be even, Abraham would be even worse as long as Lot was with him. So God makes the land not able to sustain this great herd of cattle. Now Abraham has a Lot. Lot didn't get much down there in Egypt. Who's eating up the most of the land? Lot's people, Lot's animals, or Abraham's animals? Did Abraham do any horse trading with Egypt, with Pharaoh? No. So Abraham has got so many cattle and sheep and goats and everything, now, maybe even horses, that they're eating up the land and there's no room enough for Lot's people to water his animals and Lot. So they separate. Now Abraham was very generous here. He said, go look to the right, go look to the left, and you just figure out what kind of land you want. He said, I want Sodom. I want to live down there by Jericho. I want down there in that beautiful paradise, that pristine Garden of Eden down there. That's where I want to be. You can take those dry hills, and they are dry hills. You ever been over there, Brother Roger? I've been. It's dry hills. So Abraham was out there following the grass with all these big herds now. And Lot goes down there and settles and becomes a judge and a lawyer in Sodom and Gomorrah.
A politician.
I tell you what, there aren't very many good politicians in the history of the world. And so in verse number 11, Lot chose for himself all the valley of Jordan, and Lot journeyed and pilgrimed eastward, and they separated from each other, and Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley. He was a city boy, wasn't he? Bright lights in big cities, and moved his tents as far as Sodom. And the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. All right. So we go on. We find out there's going to be a war with kings. These other kings are going to come in and go down there and conquer these five cities around Sodom and Gomorrah. And they're going to take Lot off. And then Abraham's going to go down there and he's going to save them because he's got an army. He's got a lot of generals. Abraham had about 318 generals. Generals. These are captains and officers. And how many men he had, we do not know. But he had at least 318 generals. And it names here in the 14th chapter the War of the Kings. And then he goes back And then he comes up and he sees in the 14th chapter, he sees Melchizedek. Melchizedek, some people think, is the pre-incarnate Christ, but at least one thing we know for sure, that Melchizedek is a type of Christ. Because the book of Hebrews tells us that he was. And after he's returned from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Shaveh, and that is the king's valley. And Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought out bread and wine, and he was the priest of the God Most High. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram, the God of Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be the God Most High who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And he gave him a tenth of all. Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth. So Abraham tithed, didn't he? Tithing goes all the way from the Garden of Eden onward. And then we go on over into the 15th chapter, and we see that Abraham is promised a son. And we go on a little further, and we see that Abraham finally married Pharaoh's daughter, but Abraham had actually made Pharaoh's daughter a slave to his wife. He didn't marry her to begin with like he was supposed to. He was given a princess, but he made her a princess. He made her a slave. And then his wife says, "I want to have a child by her." And actually what Sarah is saying to Abraham, "Abraham, it's your fault. I'm not having kids. Not my fault. God is cursing you, not me." And to prove this to you, and she has this all in her mind, she gives him Hagar, and she is young and she is virile and fertile. And she said, "Well, when you have sex with her, you're going to find out you're not going to have any kids either. But in the meanwhile, I'm going to give her your wife, and if she has a kid, it's going to be mine." So he does, and she gets pregnant right off. Wasn't Abraham's fault. So now Sarah is real mad. And she starts abusing this girl. And we see God appearing to Hagar. And Hagar tells her that, and he names the child that they're going to have. And they name that child what? What's the child?
Ishmael.
Huh? Ishmael. What does Ishmael mean? God hears. God heard her. And she called Jehovah her shepherd. This is the first time Jehovah is called Jehovah my shepherd, the Lord my shepherd, as in Psalm 23 later on. Now Abraham receives in 17th chapter the covenant of circumcision. And he's already baptizing because he baptizes all these dudes before he circumcises them. And then we find out that finally the birth of Isaac is promised in the 18th chapter. The birth of Isaac is promised. And we go on and we go on and on. Then we find the doom of Sodom and Gomorrah. And then we find Lot. And now we have the ancestral people of Ammon and Moab. Moab means water from the father. And Ammon means people of my people. In other words, his daughters, he had sex with two of his daughters, Lot did. I mean, they actually seduced him because they wanted to get pregnant. And they got pregnant. And the other one says, "I got water from my father. I got semen from my father. And here is my child." And that's what's Moab. And we have Ruth the Moabite. So not all of those people are going to be cursed. And we have the Ammonites. We have all these people. Now let's go on a little further and see if Abraham's got any better. His temperament has got any better. Now Abraham journeyed in the 20th chapter toward the land of Negev, and he settled in Kadesh and Shur, and there he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." So Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took her, Sarah. This is the woman that through her womb is going to be the promised son. And he sells her again. The used car salesman. He sells her as a virgin. Well, she's not a virgin. And not only that, God has promised that he's going to have a child through this woman. And he goes over there and he sells her one more time. Let's see. Has Abraham got any better? He's a better used car salesman than before because he learned tricks, better tricks. See, I remember when I was working in the used car lot with my uncles. My Uncle Jay was a pretty good old boy, but my Uncle Wesley was a used car salesman. The typical used car salesman. They would go out there, and I was a mechanic for them. And I pulled down cars, pulled the crank off when the engines were knocking, and we'd put leather around, instead of an insert, we'd put leather around the insert so it wouldn't be knocking for a while. He pulled that on me one time, my Uncle Wesley did. Sold me a car. He said it had just been rebuilt. It had been rebuilt. They painted the engine up real good, painted the battery. He used to do all this stuff back then. He'd paint the batteries, paint the engines all up, and the engines were junk. But you go out there and look, oh, look how good that engine is. Look out. Listen to her purr. Kick those tires. You know, they're going to blow out and all this stuff. You know, they do this. Well, here we have Abraham. I did these type of things with my uncles. I was a mechanic. Sometimes we built a good car, and sometimes it was scrap, but they always had a good paint job on them, on the engine. People would look up and listen to the engine and look at it. Pull the oil out, and it's clean. Look here, it's clean. See, I just drained this oil so I could put that leather around that rod. He didn't say that. And here we have the used car salesman here again. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister, and so Abimelech. Abimelech means what? Brother Roger, Abimelech. Abimelech. Father of the king. Now, Abimelech is a title. And so there's more than one Abimelech in the Bible. Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a hypnotic trance, a dream. Here we have it going over again now. Don't you dare touch this man. And Abimelech in a dream of the night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man. That ungodly buzzard just sold you this. He's a prophet of God. I don't care how bad he is. He's my prophet. You take his wife and you're a dead man. You're a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married. Now, people back then, even as ungodly as they are and were, there were laws of camaraderie, weren't they? And these laws were in existence, and this is one of the things you didn't steal a man's wife or whatever. Now Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, will you slay a nation even though blameless? See, Abimelech's praying to God. He said, Lord, Master, will you kill an innocent people? Will you kill an innocent people? And did he not himself say to me that she is my sister, and she herself said, he is my brother? And in the integrity of my heart and in the innocence of my hands, I have done this. I'm innocent of this man's sin. Remember, later on, Pontius Pilate would say this. And God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this. And I also kept you from sinning. Against me, therefore, I did not let you touch her. And therefore, restore the woman's wife, for he is a what?
Prophet.
An ungodly prophet. And he will pray for you. Look at this. You may be a lot more honest than that man, but he said he knows who God is. You're pagans, but that man's a prophet of the real Most High God. Boy, isn't this something, Brother Ray? This is a story, isn't it? If I'd have been God, I'd have left this out of the Bible. Wouldn't you? I'd have left it out. But God is honest. He tells the truth about us. And he will pray for you. And you will live. I'm going to have this scoundrel pray for you. But if you... Huh? Isn't that something?
This is not right.
But this is truth, isn't it?
Yes.
Is God honest?
Yes.
Is honest in his word?
Mm-hmm.
But if you did not restore her, know that you shall surely die. And you and all who are yours will die. So Abimelech arose early in the morning, right away, before the break of day, and called all his servants, and told these in their own hearing that the men were greatly frightened. This Abraham, he is an ungodly prophet, but he is a prophet. He is a prophet. He's ungodly, but he is a prophet. Then Abimelech called Abraham. See, his name's Abraham. Now he's saved by grace already. For in grace you're having been saved through faith, and that not out of yourself. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Abraham saved by grace, and we know he's saved by grace, don't we? Because he's still ungodly. But he's a prophet of God. And he said to him, "Why have you done this to us, and how have I sinned against you? And that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin. You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What have you encountered that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is actually my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came about, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, 'This is a kindness of which you will show me. Everywhere we go, say of me that he is my brother.'" He's going to lie wherever he goes. He did, didn't he? Mm-hmm. A liar. "And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male and female servants and gave them to Abraham and restored his wife Sarah to him. Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before you. Settle wherever you are and stay there.'"
Stay there.
"Stay away from me. Get, go. And pray for me." And Sarah, and to her, he said, "Behold, I have given you your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is in your vindication before all that you have done, you and before all you have cleared." Now, it was a little bit more than that. He said, "I gave your husband 1,000 pieces of silver. Now go buy yourself a veil. Go put on decent clothes. You're dressing like a virgin. You're not a virgin. Act like a woman. Act like a wife. And behave like a wife." That's what he told her. He corrected her.
What's the difference of the dressing?
The dress, a virgin was dressed differently than a married woman. A married woman never showed herself at all. She was her property of her husband. She wore her veil. We find out later on that when Muhammad started his religion, the women didn't wear veils. Did you know that? Not in that land. The women didn't wear veils. But because he had so many wives and he picked out the most beautiful wives in the land, he even took his son's wife for his wife. And he made an excuse for that they were looking upon his wife, so he says that his wives needed to wear veils and to cover themselves so the men could not see her and lust after her. It was only Muhammad's wives that had veils on the beginning, and then it go into the Sunnis and to where that was their practice. They practiced that, the Hadiths and the Sunnis, then they began to practice the veils. Now he tells her to go get a veil. Go get a veil. Now we see all of this. And to Sarah he said, "Behold, I've given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. And go cover yourself before all who are with you. And before all men, you are cleared." Cover yourself up. It, in the Hebrew, it says that, doesn't it, Brother Roger? Mm-hmm. Not in the translation. Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids so that they bore children. And the Lord had closed fast all of the wombs. Remember what I told you? They could not even cohabit.
Yeah, that's something he was in.
They had, all their wombs were closed. There was no entrance to their wombs. This is a miracle, isn't it?
That's unreal.
A wife said, "Look what happened to me. What's going on here?" So the Lord closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Now Isaac now is born. And we see all of this. And we have God telling Abraham, because you've done all that you've done, that your children are going to go down in Egypt for 400 years. They're going to go down into Egypt for 400 years. And when they go down there, they're going to come out with a great substance. So God told Abraham that they're going to go there. God told Noah that they will have this land of Canaan. And so, but God knew what every person down there, we're dealing with these Canaanites now. We're dealing with them. This is who they are. The ones that have integrity and the ones that are innocent and the ones that believe can believe. But as a whole, their ethnic backgrounds are cursed because not what God, that God cursed them, but God knew what they would be like of his foreknowledge. God does not make people make the decisions that they make. God never entices a man to do evil. He always entices them to do good. In 1 John 2:2, for he is our propitiation, not only for ours, but for the whole world. For God so loved the world, in John 3:16, that he gave his only begotten son, the whole world, to redeem the whole world back to himself. We see all of this. Don't ever think that God is going to abuse the conscience and the volition of a man by making him do something different. Now, God did use Pharaoh later on, but Pharaoh had rejected God, hadn't he? Pharaoh rejected God and hardened his heart against God several times before God finally sealed his doom. And God knew that was going to happen. He knew what Pharaoh was going to do, and he said he would. And he knew what Jacob and Esau would do, and he says, I love Jacob and I hated Esau. Jacob I loved and Esau I hated. Because why? Because he knew what they would be. And when Isaac's wife, Rebekah, when she was pregnant with these two children in her womb, he said, the younger shall lord over the older, and the older shall serve the younger. By the way, because of Abraham's sin in his life, we have the Middle East crisis, don't we? But because of Abraham's righteousness, we have a Messiah. That's the grace of God all over. The grace of God. We always see darkness wrestling with light. That's what John the 3rd chapter says. The light darkness does not want. They don't want light. The word aletheia means no darkness. That's truth. The name Aletheia, the woman's name Aletheia means truth. Truth. No light. No darkness. No shadows. Any questions? Do you have questions, Christina?
Yes. Where does it say, what part, I didn't get the part where it says that Hagar was given to Abraham.
That was the maidservants.
Yes.
She was one of them.
She was one of the maidservants.
Yes, she was one. The book of Jasher tells you more about this, which is a historical book. It tells you all about this.
Okay.
You get a lot of information from the book of Jasher. If you get the book of Jasher and read it along with this, you'll find out all the names of the people. There's more historical information. The Bible just tells you.
Yes.
But, and we have extra biblical evidence of what happened here. It didn't happen what we say in the Bible, but there was a lot more circumstances. But the Bible is inspired, and we have the evidence of all of this, but then we have the extra biblical evidence of who they were and what was going on.
Okay.
All right. She was one of the maidservants, or one of the, well, she was actually a princess that was given to him. The Bible doesn't say that much, but we find from the book of Jasher that she was actually a princess. And Abraham very much abused Pharaoh by taking his princess, his daughter, and giving her to his wife for a slave. He was supposed to marry her and have children, and these children would be related, which he did finally did. You know, and there would be 12 princes come from Ishmael, wouldn't it? Ishmael. Mm-hmm. All right. Did that help you a little bit? All right. Brother Roger, you got any questions? New to the meal? Brother Ray?
I just keep listening to all the how God and volition and all this stuff, you know, allowing things to happen, foreknowledge and all that. You know.
His permissive will and his foreknowledge and predestination, how he predestined nations that would do this. He did not make them do that. He did not come in space and time and twist their arms. But he knew that's what they would do. And then he prophesied all of this would happen. Abraham's children through Jacob would go down into Egypt for 400 years. He promised, because you went down to Egypt, Abraham, I'm going to send them down to Egypt. And they're going to become slaves down there. Now, I saved you out of Egypt, and I'm going to save them out of Egypt, but they're going to be down there and languish for 400 years because of your sin.
You know, you look at today and the church capacity, you know, I've seen it in different churches. People, they live, like they're, you know, in my opinion, it would be a disgrace to God the way they live.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they're still living.
Yes.
Yet they're still members of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not doing things that would promote exclusion of that church. God allows people to live the way they want to live, but they pay the consequences by their way.
That's right. They pay for their sins.
Yeah.
They pay for it. We don't pay for our sins when we come before God, do we?
Right.
Because Jesus has covered them. But right now, we pay for our sins.
Right,
right now. When we're disobedient to God, we pay for our sins right now. But never are they accounted to us, our spirit. When we go on from this life, that's salvation by grace. Abraham is the greatest example of the child of God in the world today. Lot is a great example of an ungodly child of God. He went to heaven, but what a scoundrel. He vexed his spirit. He vexed it. He vexed his righteous spirit. Vexed it. We see that in life. Did you learn something?
Mm-hmm.
Roger, did you learn something today? I've been teaching him for years. I don't want sometimes before I even give you anything new. All right. If you have no more questions, go out and do something eternal, Brother Roger. Would you?